Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome in to another edition of the Under Center podcast on NBC Sports Chicago. As always, I'm JJ Stankovic, joined by John Moon Mullen here at Hallis Hall. We also have Layla Rahimi here in the coat closet at Hallis Hall, where the acoustics are actually far better in here than they are elsewhere. So, Layla, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I've always wanted to do a podcast from a coat closet at a football facility.
You know, making dreams come true.
Yeah, it's an informal soundstage. We've got to dress this up a little bit.
The hangers make it acoustically better. All right, well, now that we've got our introductions out of the way, let's get to the big topic that's going to dominate today, tomorrow, the next couple weeks, next couple months here at Hallis Hall. What is the future of John Fox? The Bears 23-16 losers to the Green Bay Packers on Sunday, a game they were favored to win, a game in which there are really no excuses to not beat the Packers. Without Aaron Rodgers, there's no quarterback boogeyman of Rodgers or Brett Favre there, and the Bears kind of fell flat on their face. But Moon, you wrote something on NBC Sports Chicago this week about how, you know, look, a week ago we were talking playoff scenarios with the Bears and the possibility of that. Does one game really change so much that it's going to get John Fox fired?
Yes and no. It is one of those. It's a giant domino that, you know, if things go this way, if he ends up losing his job at the end of the year, then you can point to this game. That said, you know, the point I would raise is, as a fan, what happens? They go out and they stick it to Stafford and the Lions, which they have done in the past. Okay, that's pretty good. And then they surprise everybody, and someone is going to beat the Eagles. They're not going to go 15-1. So maybe they do something to the Eagles. How does the narrative change? All of a sudden, Bear fans are going to feel much differently. And the problem of looking at this past game was they seemed to have lost their compass. All of a sudden, are they a running team? That was their identity. Well, they're not running the ball very well, and they're doing it too predictably. It just feels like things are kind of off the rails, and that's the sort of thing that makes it uncomfortable for a head coach. You know, if things are at least organized and moving in a certain direction, that's one thing. I don't know about you guys. It seemed that they were kind of off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely tell. I mean, on what planet does anybody expect the week after a bye that your team is committing 11 penalties in the first half? It's that kind of stuff that I think really is frustrating. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, for some reason, well, we know the reason. The losses to the Packers are always going to upset the fan base more. Whether it's the whooping that happened in Green Bay on the Thursday night with the rain delay for very different reasons, or what happened with a Brett Hundley-led team that shouldn't have been that effective against a team that was favored.
Right.
And the stat that everybody's brought up, and it's funny because to me Vegas doesn't mean a whole lot when it comes to
It's an opinion poll, really.
But when all six games where the Bears have been favored under the John Fox era have been lost, that does say something.
Well, you wonder about overconfidence or something.
Yeah.
And you wonder, well, what are they? They have no business being overconfident, except, as even Fox said, you know, a week ago we were the second coming. And they were 2-1 in the previous games and played New Orleans tough and beaten Carolina and Baltimore. So, yeah, the expectations, and it's very possible they did take their foot off the gas. Oh, wow, they know they're not playing Aaron Rodgers. And does it make you overconfident? I don't know. That wouldn't be the first time.
But if that were the case, it's incumbent on the coaching staff to pick that up during the week and basically communicate, hey guys, look, you're still 3-5. You haven't done anything yet. You have a chance to do something, but Layla, like you said, to come out and commit 11 penalties in first half, I think 7 of those were walked off. But look, you still committed 11 penalties. That's bad.
Well, and the only reason they didn't accept the other ones because the play was bad.
Because Packers didn't. Jordan Howard was losing 3 yards on the play.
Yeah, but why take a penalty? Yeah.
And just we talk about progress a lot. That's what you've written numerous times, Moon, that the ownership group, the McCaskies, they just wanted to see progress this year. in no way, shape, or form did that loss to Green Bay represent any progress, especially when you go from the debacle the first time you played the Packers, and it's like, okay, well, now here's a great opportunity to show progress with your quarterback of the future playing an Aaron Rodgers-less Packers team. You go into that game thinking you have the better quarterback against the Packers for the first time in, what, decades?
Yeah.
And to lay that sort of an egg, just that, you know, I think you said it after the game, Moon, these are the kind of games that get coaches fired.
Yeah, and if you really need to, you know, use Fox's own phrase, what the coaching staff needed to do, and maybe this is just not his makeup, he needed to make Brett Hundley the second coming of Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre rolled in one. We've got to come up with some sort of motivation or something. Again, they're professionals, so they're going to get the coach fired, you know, not his own incompetence. But yeah, I think the only thing, bigger picture with that is, what would that mean for the organization? Because that would be under George McCaskey's stewardship, taking over as chairman in 2011, starting with Lovie Smith in 2012, that would be three head coaches in the span of 6 years. Welcome to Cleveland. You know, that's not...
Woo! Boy, welcome to Cleveland. That's not a good connotation to make right there.
Well, and another one could perhaps possibly be made when it comes to quarterbacks as well, because these are the things that change with regimes and head coaches, right? It's an indication of what is going on up top. How many quarterbacks have you drafted in the last several years? How many head coaches have you had? How many GMs have you had? So that goes down a path that nobody, I think, wants to go down. The other thing that concerns me, though, is what did you dedicate to this season when you started? Did you dedicate the idea that you needed to win a certain amount of games? Or was it going to be, we are going to develop talent? And if that's the case, then what's the direction? But it's in a 16-game season, you're gonna have to win some. You just are. So either tell me you want to win all these games that should be winnable, or tell me you really are working on the progression of your quarterback.
Yeah, well, this is a point we've talked about. I mean, I don't think those are mutually exclusive. And in fact, the goal is to win. The objective is to develop the talent, and those should happen concurrently.
Right.
In fact, there shouldn't be some bizarre game plan to develop Mitch Trubisky. Well, he needs to really work on his throwing the 18-yard out. So we're going to call 10 of those. No, you don't do that. You get him used to winning, and I think that's the kind of the bigger picture. Especially because John Fox, since he's been here, even the first preseason game, I won't say playing to win. You always play to win. Thank you, Herm Edwards. But
hello.
But you really, you know, he played. He didn't change the rotation of when he substituted players, but he instilled them. He wanted to get the Mark Trestman losing mentality out of here, and I think that's still a top priority. That's you're talking about progress. And getting back to the Packer game, it's painful to do that. Why do we don't want to talk about the Packer game anymore, do we? No.
But no, we can stop after this.
Yeah, but you know, talking about progress is, here is a team that on a short week without Aaron Rodgers, yada yada, with their affairs are fit, you needed to see, okay, well, if they don't have Aaron Rodgers, maybe we should be as good as they are. Well, they weren't.
Right.
You know, they could have, again, it was only one touchdown, but the lack of progress, big picture, means you didn't close the gap on your biggest rival. Apologies to Minnesota and Detroit.
Well, and that, so we talk about, okay, what happens if the Bears come out and they beat Detroit and then they beat Philadelphia, but it's not like they showed any signs against Green Bay that they're going to do that. The way that you beat those teams is with a couple turnovers. Okay, they didn't have any turnovers against Green Bay. The defense didn't force any. You can have a balanced offense. Well, the offense was a little more balanced, I think, than it was previously against Green Bay, but it wasn't effective. And to beat a team in Detroit that's right above you in the standings, that's has some hopes of maybe making a playoff run, you got to be better than you were on Sunday. And then to go and beat Philadelphia, you're going to have to play the game of the season to win that. It's hard for me to see that happening. Layla, you were in Philadelphia for quite a while. That's not happening, is it? The Bears are probably not beating the Eagles.
I think in order for the Bears to beat the Eagles, they would have to provide an intense pass rush, and their secondary would have to play just lights out perfect. And they would have to score points and move the football.
And maybe not have a challenge go completely haywire and take a touchdown, potential touchdown off the board, and then lead to a fumble out of the end zone. That might help.
Win the challenge and lose the game. It's a weird combo.
That kept his time out. That was weird.
Yeah.
You know, the frustrating thing about that to me is the fact that there's a reason we have replay. And the reason is because we all know that the humans aren't correct all the time. But you'd think that the intelligence behind that told him we need to challenge this. So it's, I don't think it's just on Fox, that one. Mm-hmm. The thing that concerns me is the Packers took a completely proactive game plan. We thought that they didn't have a pass rush. Mm-hmm. And look what happened on Sunday. You know, they totally took what they were given and used it. They rolled up, you know, they rolled up the extra man in the box, and it works. Like, what? I mean, if that's not the blueprint for teams mm-hmm. in the future, what is?
Well, and Trubisky was tentative on some of those plays. You know, I did a breakdown of the sack where Josh Bellamy was wide open in the flat, and Trubisky didn't get rid of the ball. I think some of that was he might have been looking downfield toward Dontrell Inman, who looked like he was getting some separation. But, I mean, the coverage was pretty clear. Devon House was in zone, and he was actually just kind of sitting down reading Bellamy with HaHa Clinton Dix as kind of a deep safety. There was no way Trubisky was going to make that throw going to his left, but he kind of maybe flinched a little bit. And then by the time he looked down and saw Bellamy wide open, Perry was right by him, and he couldn't get rid of the ball. But right. you'd take the easy completion. That was on a first down. There was so much, you know, baying from the fans about, you know, they're running the ball far too much on first down. They're too predictable. That was a time where they got Josh Bellamy in motion against eight men in the box. They got him open. That should have been an easy completion to kind of get the drive going. Instead, it was an eight-yard loss.
Well, and even Trubisky said that the design of that play, the ball had to be in his hand, had to be out of Trubisky's hands sooner because it was a bit of a trap coming up from the secondary, but it had to get the ball into Bellamy's hands. The play had to get it in his hands before that trap closed, and so he had turned a chance to get around. Yeah, I think the odd part, you know, for the Bears, you know, so much of the identity was built on running the football, and then to have all the criticism, well, they're running the football too much. I mean, that's, as I said before, it's sort of like, well, you if you should be able to impose your will, and that's kind of what, looking ahead even to Detroit, if I have one key to the game, it's going to be being able to establish yourself. You establish your will on somebody. I mean, to great, and comes and goes. But they didn't do that as a running football. A team that's built its identity on running didn't do it. And the team that built its identity on a stout defense didn't do it. I mean, we're sitting in the press box how many times a stop here in the game, they can win. It was 16-13, make a stop, and they didn't.
I think I turned to you at one point. I think it was on the drive where Hundley converted the third down. And when they started that drive, I think I turned to you and I was just like, Bears don't have a turnover today. Now would be if they get a turnover on that possession, they probably win the game. But instead, we saw too many defensive mistakes. Kyle Fuller getting picked on in a way that teams picked on Kyle Fuller previously this year, and he looked great. And then he got picked on by Brett Hundley and really struggled. You know, you had Pernell McPhee making the decision to have an inside move instead of keeping contain. And I looked at that play, too, and you look on the other side of the field, there's Leonard Floyd playing contain. Akeem Hicks, one-on-one matchup, starting to kind of get into the backfield a little bit. If Pernell McPhee just keeps contain on that play, they probably stop it. And just those mistakes were uncharacteristic of a defense that was so good in November, or sorry, in October. They can't be there again in November if the Bears have any hope of turning this around.
Yeah, and like you said, Layla, I mean, part of the future going forward, Richard Dent once told me that he had a rule of three. All great defenses have three great pass rushers. You know, again, you can go back through the Purple People Eaters and the Fearsome Foursome and the Steel Curtain. They all have that. The Bears don't have that. But what I was alarmed at when we saw that the McPhee thing was this is a veteran making a bad mistake, taking an inside route, losing contain. Mm-hmm. And again, this is may get back to coaching or something. Because I remember in the 2015 season, the odd part of some of the breakdowns was Antrell Roll making kind of a rookie mistake, waiting for a ball to come to him, and then a Viking receiver picks it off. There were so many veteran mistakes, oddly. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start wondering, boy, what are they being told during the week? Or how is their mentality being coached?
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. If we're making simple things hard, and these are guys who know a heck of a lot more football than I do, you got to ask what's the assignment there?
Yeah, are you aware, like you said, there's contain on one side, or I don't know.
Well, and on that play, you look after the play, this is pointed out by Chris Spielman on the TV broadcast, McPhee kind of like threw his arms up toward Mitch Unrein, being like, what are you doing? And Unrein was like, what are you talking about? I was taking the double team there, and it looked like McPhee thought Unrein was going to kind of do a stunt back outside and he was going to be contained, but Unrein's getting doubled there, and they're, the, you know, John Fox said after the game, no, that was just a decision Purnell made. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Moon. That's a bad decision by a veteran who, in that instance, shouldn't be making that decision. You could almost write that off if that was a rookie. Being like, well, it was a rookie trying to make a play, sort of like Trubisky. Well, he's a rookie trying to make a play
or
in that situation.
Or Leonard Floyd. You can almost give him a pass. No pun intended. Pun intended. Yes, but you know,
don't rush that one.
Oh, stop it! Stop yourself. But yeah, I mean, the looking to the bigger picture, what the Bears absolutely have to have, looking ahead to Philadelphia or certainly to Detroit with Stafford. They need those three great pass rushers. They need McPhee, who was signed for a lot of money to be a pass rusher. Akeem Hicks, a lot of money to be a pass rusher. Leonard Floyd traded up to get him to be a pass rusher. Fellas, this is your game. And I think if they're not winning matchups, mm-hmm. those three, plus whether it's Unrein, whether it's Eddie Goldman, the Bears really don't have a whole lot of chance. But they need to disrupt passers, and they didn't do it to Brett Hundley, and I'm not sure you can do it to Matthew Stafford, but they have to.
Question: are we not giving the Lions enough credit given what they did against the Packers on Monday Night Football?
That's a good question, because if it weren't for that kind of pointless last-minute drive in which Green Bay got in the end zone, that's a dominant blowout, and it still was. I think that's the point I'm trying to make here.
Kind of what you expected the Bears to do.
Right. You expect that the Bears would kind of follow that game plan. Detroit went into Green Bay and did that. The Bears may have this inferiority complex with the Packers, but Detroit has it far more. Yeah. Detroit has been just completely owned by Green Bay for like the entirety of their franchise, and they went into Green Bay and they dominated the Packers.
Yeah, the Lions hadn't won in Green Bay since when did the last glacier come through? It was a while ago. And yet they dominated the play, and I think that's... Yeah, you need to take over the game, and the Bears didn't, and paid for it all afternoon.
And that, I think, that just speaks to the fact that, well, Detroit's a better team than the Bears, the Packers are a better team than the Bears, and the Vikings clearly are a better team than the Bears. So here we are, John Fox in his third year. We're not only looking at maybe not the progress that the ownership wanted to see, but we're looking at three last place finishes in the division. That, in the course of Bears history, is not precedented as much,
yeah,
right, Moon?
Mark Trestman at least had an 8-8 season.
Yeah.
We haven't got there yet with John.
Well, I mean, you could even if you say that that's Lovie, those are Lovie's players and that was largely Lovie's team, they still went 8-8 that year. And, yeah, going back to your point that you made a little earlier, that Fox is brought in to kind of clean up the mess that Trestman left. Okay, now the mess is cleaned up. We heard all about how the culture in the locker room is different. It's a great culture. Now they got to go out and prove it, and they haven't gone out and proved that actually makes a difference yet.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and it just has occurred to me over the last week or so, you know, what are they missing? Again, you can't. I wouldn't use injuries as an excuse, because they're really not there this year. We've been around in the locker room enough. The guy that I think they are missing more than we realize is Willie Young. Big fan of Willie Young as a team leader, a guy with a skill set that's part of the pass rush. Again, I think that's not as an excuse, because somebody else, Akeem Hicks or Purnell McPhee, somebody has to be able to grab the flag and say, follow me. And Willie Young was, I think, a terrific presence. He was a great, he and Akeem Hicks and Leonard Floyd go out to dinner once a week. And that influence, they haven't gotten that. So, but they can't be so vulnerable that if one guy goes down, it's not Brian Urlacher in 2009, the rest of the season is lost, but... Somebody needs to be able to step up and dominate, and no one's doing it.
It's an interesting thought, and, you know, I flash back to that Lions game I asked about, because the thing that stood out to me from that game so much wasn't the ineptitude of the Packers. It was the overwhelming just fluidity of what Matt Stafford had done on the field in that game. Yeah. Like, he was set up perfectly. But again, I think it was that's what he saw, that's what he read, that's how well he knew his receivers. He doesn't have a one-dimensional offense, not for lack of trying, just the fact that, you know, he's got playmakers both in the passing game and in the running game, so they're able to do it. As long as the Bears don't have anybody offensively to throw the ball to.
Well, although I wonder, you know, he threw 35 passes, and again, it gets into a whole other issue, which we can maybe talk to Dow Loggins about, personnel. Trey McBride has three catches for a total of 92 yards.
Against New Orleans.
Against New Orleans, a really good defense, and barely plays against the Packers.
Yep.
And Kendall Wright, where is he? And
Adam Shaheen gets two catches early in the game and isn't targeted again the rest of the day.
And Marcus Wheaton, is he here in the club? Let's look under some of the coats or something. But, you know, where are they? And, again, that's to the balanced offense, the irony of some of this stuff is I think Dow Loggins is actually calling a fairly balanced game plan. At some point, not Jay Leno. He did block like Jay Leno occasionally. But, you know, Charles Leno, dominate, own the corner. Mm-hmm. You need to control Clay Matthews and let us run at him or something. And, again, this just starts falling back on the players.
Or just buy more time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if a young quarterback is staring down a receiver, it's the NFL. They're going to key in on it. And they did.
And that just kind of gets back to the issue of, how, you know, developing Trubisky now within the season where, look, if you lose to Detroit and Philadelphia and you're 3-8 after Thanksgiving, I mean, the whole goal is now to develop Trubisky. You're not going to win enough games to make anything actually matter. So now the goal does become developing Trubisky because if you win 3 games or you win 7 games, it's not really going to matter in the sense of where this or how the season is viewed long term. The Bears could finish with 4 wins in December, but they'd be over San Francisco, Cincinnati, Cleveland, and then either Detroit or Minnesota. And at some point, is that really? I know it matters to the people in that room, in the locker room, who get paid to win, but in the grand scheme of where the franchise is going, it doesn't matter a whole lot.
No, but I think again, bigger picture, because I really don't like the idea of just devoting the season to developing one guy, Leonard Floyd. Anytime you want to go for the next 5 sacks, great. It's developing Adam Shaheen, somebody for Trubisky to throw to.
Getting the ball to Tariq Cohen more than he was on the field for 13 snaps on Sunday.
I mean, somehow, you know, making a coherent, because developing him is concurrent with developing everybody else around him. Because how many years did they say, well, Jay Cutler has no weapons, you need to get weapons around him? Well, if it's just, you can't develop Mitch Trubisky in a vacuum.
Right.
So it really is Adam Shaheen, knock, knock, we need you to get open a little more or whatever. So, you know, I still would love to see, I don't want to see a pass-heavy game. I want to see a coherent offense because that's what's going to win usually in the, I mean, for years, we're all as good as Tom Brady was, the Patriots were a really successful running team. So it really is a holistic approach, and that's part of Trubisky's development.
Yeah, I think everybody forgets that. We all forget that the run is still used to open up the pass, no matter what the offense is.
Or vice versa. All of a sudden, you got the pass rush. You know, they're coming, and now you gash them.
Yeah,
you know, that's basic football.
But you know, it was interesting because it was brought up a few weeks ago, the idea of like the first play from scrimmage being play action. Well, if NFL teams don't respect your receivers, then they're not biting.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's knowing your spots, too.
And everybody, you can single up on everybody because nobody on your offense is capable of beating a double team.
Okay. So let's end this podcast with this topic because I bring up the idea of developing Trubisky now is the most important thing. If the Bears see strides in Trubisky over these next 6 games or however many are left, I forget at this point. But if they see strides in Trubisky developing but they don't win these games, could that still be enough for the coaching staff to still be in place next year? If they see Trubisky being more decisive, he almost got 300 yards on Sunday, continuing to kind of develop and grow as a quarterback in a very positive way, could that be enough for this coaching staff to stick around, even if they do go 5-11 or 6-10?
That's such a chaotic question to raise because
I like chaos.
Yeah, if Fox stays, then Dow Loggins pretty much has to stay because something will be developing. Somebody's responsible for the kid developing. Plus, having seen in what happened in the past was, let's say, Dick Geron. He almost can't fire the coordinator and then expect to get somebody because who's going to come here with less than a 3-year contract? And the Bears don't want to do that. If I'm a coordinator, do I want to go to Chicago? Because Fox could be gone in 1 year.
Right.
So it's such a spaghetti bowl of issues. Yeah, they develop, but if they don't win, there are going to be 20,000 no-shows in December, and that's not going to sit well with ownership either.
I think that... I think the old adage and the automatic logic, aside from like the what you said, you know, just the crowd and how fed up the Bears fans are, and that is a very big piece of it. I think if Trubisky improves, and I think anybody with 13 games to his name in college and then what he's now got in the NFL is going to improve because he hasn't had a lot of work overall. But if he does improve, then yeah, you keep him. Because how, like, that's cruel to a rookie quarterback to then say, hey, never mind, here's another system.
But
even though you were working on it.
But look at the Rams. The Rams, you know, Jared Goff was far worse than Mitchell Trubisky will be this year. That is, it's a different type of a scenario. But everyone wants this sort of, you know, panacea of an offensive mind like Sean McVay coming in, and all of a sudden you go from the worst offense in the NFL to the best offense in the NFL. That doesn't necessarily always work out the way you like it to.
Didn't that have more to do with Jeff Fisher than it? I mean, come on.
But
we
know
what we're getting in Jeff Fisher. We knew what we were.
Well, but to the point, I'm not sure that it did necessarily, because he was a rookie. He was terrible.
He was awful.
The word bust was applied.
Yeah.
Even he said, you know, people consider me a bust. Well, you know, a lot of difference a year can make. The interesting part, you just raised that about Goff. At this point, Trubisky will be better at the end of his first year than Goff was, and he only had 13 games in college. So for Bear fans, if you're looking for something positive, how about that one?
You know, quarterbacks can develop. It's not always linear. There will be some ups and downs. But, yeah, I mean, if you exit this year feeling like Trubisky's arrow is pointing up, then that overall is a good thing. And then I know, you know, you have to make a decision on the coaching staff at that point. Is there someone out there who will have his arrow pointing up, who will keep that arrow pointing up, or will this current coaching staff, will there sort of be a cap on it?
Yeah, well, I mean, a scenario, again, he has a fourth year on the contract with Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati. I think Bill O'Brien initially in Houston. You just don't extend him. You say, okay, you may be a lame duck, but we're not going to give you an extension. So that's one scenario that I could, if they do reasonably well, you know, we're not happy, but we're not going to make a change because there's a lot of other dominoes with the coordinator and everything else. And plus, you'd have to pay him if you fired him for $4 or $5 million.
And then you're not getting Harbaugh because you're paying him that. And thank you. Thank you for saying, oh, please. Layla, will Jim Harbaugh leave Michigan? Your thoughts?
Man, I don't even want to talk about it. To me, Jim Harbaugh, the reason why he's so successful in the college game is because he has complete control over not just the personnel, but the culture. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are a lot of coaches who thrive in that. We always think there's this adage, like, NFL coaches have to do that too. Well, some guys are just better at it in the college game.
Yep.
And if I'm Jim Harbaugh and I'm happy and I'm comfortable and, you know, I've helped make the Big Ten an excellent conference again with parity and competition, why would you go?
Don Pearson, the great Hall of Fame writer I worked with at the Tribune, had coined the term. A lot of these coaches, they're ayatollahs, meaning they, like Belichick, they kind of run everything. The GM works for them. I'm not sure Ryan Pace would have been up here. You know, that's a structure that really changes things around.
And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. And in the case of Jim Harbaugh and Chip Kelly and Nick Saban, let's all remember that, you know, it works better for them at the college level. And I think it's harder to do what they do at the college level. Yeah. But if that's how they're more comfortable and that's when it works, leave them be.
All right, so let's put a cap on this. If you have any dreams of Jim Harbaugh coming to coach the Bears, I think we probably have just squashed them.
Sorry, not sorry.
And it could happen.
I don't see
Jim any more in love with Chicago than he was with Michigan. I mean, if he wants to coach somewhere he played, well, he's already there.
Exactly. All right, well, we're going to end it on that. Hopefully we didn't totally crush your dreams of Jim Harbaugh coaching the Bears or John Fox not being the Bears head coach next year, which is something that is still very much up for discussion over these next couple weeks. Moon, thanks for joining. Layla, thanks as always for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is my first ever podcast from a coat closet.
Well, and the goal of this podcast was to develop Layla. I mean, let's face it, not to win, but just to develop.
Oh, no.
This podcast will not win.
We didn't win the podcast, but we got Layla some experience. It's valuable. You know, she only had 13 career podcasts in college, so that's where we're at. All right, we're going to
have podcasts when I was in college.
It makes you even more remarkable. You did this year.
Wow. That's amazing. All right. Well, we're going to end it on that note. Remember, you can watch Bears pre- and post-game live on NBC Sports Chicago before and after the Bears-Lions game. And then stick around. Lawrence Holmes, Alex Brown, Jim Miller, they do a great job on the Under Center podcast right after those games. Great breakdowns and analysis. from them, so be sure to subscribe to that and take a listen. All right, well, thanks, guys, for the discussion here, and we will talk to you next week.